but there's something I have to see.
Remind me again why I agreed to this.
Dez says next to me, echoing my thoughts. Today, Dez wears the t-shirt and black pants combo I'm so used to seeing him in, his hair tied back with a leather thong and his sleeve of tattoos on display. He looks broody as hell, probably because he's not exactly thrilled to be bringing me back to the royal nursery. I'm helping you solve this mystery, I say, heading down the hall. He doesn't say anything to that, but a muscle in his jaw tightens. I can feel it low in my belly, the fear that whatever happened to me and those women wasn't the end of this. Death should lift magic, even fey magic. That's one rule that's the same both here and on Earth. When we enter the nursery, a wave of déjà vu washes over me. Many of the younger children lie in cribs or beds, eerily still, and the older ones stand at the far side of the room, staring out the large windows. It's all nearly identical to how I found them before. The only thing different about the nursery is that more beds and cradles have been brought in, all to accommodate the influx of children that came from Carnon's prison. I try not to shudder as I stare at the kids. They were frightening before, when they were simply strange children that drank blood and prophesied. But now, knowing how they were conceived, the horror washes over me all over again. Even after the nurse announces us to the kids, none of them move. The hair along my arms begins to rise. There's something deeply unsettling about these kids, this place. Taking a deep breath, I head towards the window. Dez is right at my side, his heavy boots clinking with each step, his jaw tight.
You came back,
one of the children says, her back to me. I falter for a moment before pulling myself together. I did.
You weren't supposed to,
another says. I'd forgotten that these kids act as a single unit. As one, they turn, watching me with wary eyes as I approach them. Dez steps in front of me and I hear several of them hiss at him.
Any of you touch my mate like last time,
he says, speaking over their hisses,
you'll find yourselves banished.
Surprisingly, the threat works and their hisses die off. I catch Dez's eyes as he steps aside and I give him a look. Threatening kids, even creepy ones, is not kosher. He meets my gaze with a steely one of his own. All right, banishment it is. The children split their attention between cagily watching Dez and shrewdly studying me. I crouch in front of the closest child, a girl with flaming red hair, my eyes scouring her features. No horns, no claws, no slitted pupils. She looks nothing like Carnon, save for the fangs she must have in order to drink blood.
Slaves live such short lives,
she tells me as I assess her. Slaves, the official classification of most humans living in the other world. Ever heard those stories of human babies being swapped with fey changelings? Ever wonder what happened to all those human babies? Slavery is what happened to them. The Night Kingdom deemed the practice illegal some time ago, but the other kingdoms still allow it. Why do you say that? I ask the girl, trying to hide the fact that I'm majorly creeped out.
They are dirty and weak and ugly,
the boy next to her says. I'm acutely aware of the fact that in these children's eyes, I am one of the slaves they're degrading. Out of the corner of my eye, I see wispy, curling shadows form at the edges of the room, a clear indication of Dez's rising anger. I focus on the boy. Who told you that?
My father,
he replies. His mouth curves into a small, secretive smile.
He's coming for you.
I straighten, taking a step back, my eyes glued to his face. I can hear the blood rushing between my ears. They're just words, they don't mean anything. But my bones believe they do mean something, as do my instincts, as does that little voice in the back of my head. They're all telling me what I feared the moment I woke from that nightmare. It's not over. I feel Dez's hand on my stomach, gently backing me away from the children. Dazedly, I let him do so, all the while I stare at the boy. He and the rest of the children follow us with their eyes, and I get the distinct impression they're tracking me the same way predators track prey. Finally, I turn away from the boy, making a beeline for the exit. I can feel myself trembling. How absurd that a child could frighten me so much. Dez and I are just about to the door when I hear the boy's voice at my back.
These are dark times.
My wings tense, hiking up, and thank goodness the castle is full of large doors, otherwise I'd be wrestling with my unwieldy wings to get out of that room. As soon as the door clicks shut behind me, I draw in a shuddering breath. How could that boy know to say that line? It's the same line I heard whispered in the air when I visited the sleeping women weeks ago.
Carnon's dead,
Dez says. I nod. I know. I run a hand over my mouth. My fear doesn't abate. If anything, it grows. The thing is, I didn't come to see these kids because I was afraid Carnon was alive. I came here for another reason altogether. Do all Fauna Fae have animal features? I ask as we leave the nursery. My jailers had animal features, as did Carnon, as did the unfortunate Fauna messenger I saw yesterday. Dez stops.
Most do.
And Carnon's children? I say. Would they share his features? The bargainer's mouth tightens.
At least some of them would, yes.
Those children didn't share any of his features, I say. By Dez's expression, I see that he's already come to the same conclusion I just have. Carnon is not their father. Chapter 7. Carnon is not their father. Carnon is not their father, but how? He was the one imprisoning those women. He was the one sexually assaulting them. Beside me, Dez begins walking again, like this revelation doesn't change everything. That's when I realize, you knew. I accuse him as we head down his palace halls. Rather than appearing surprised or guilty or ashamed by my accusation, rather than any of those normal responses, Dez appraises me with one of his typical devil-may-care looks. He lifts a shoulder.
So what if I did?
So what if I slap a palm to his sculpted chest and halt him in the middle of the hall. Oh no, amigo, our relationship doesn't work like that. He glances down at my hand, and I can tell I'm getting close to riling up the King of Night.
Our relationship doesn't work like what, precisely, Cherub?
He asks, his gaze going shrewd. You can't just keep secrets like that from me. He has the audacity to look amused, though it doesn't reach his eyes.
I assure you I can.
My eyes slit. Dez, I warn. He removes my hand from his chest.
Is that supposed to be a threatening tone?
He asks, raising an eyebrow. He clucks his tongue and brings my hand up to his mouth.
Because if it is,
he continues,
then you've got to work on your intimidation game.
He continues.
I mean, you gave it a decent try, but I'm more turned on than anything else.
Dez proceeds to kiss the tips of my fingers, which is totally distracting. Who knew fingertip kisses were even a thing? Because they so are. I'm declaring it here and now. Focus, Callie!
Let me show you something,
he says softly. So much for focusing. Rather than picking up our argument where we left off, I let Dez lead me through his palace. We eventually enter what looks like a grand library, the arches of it inlaid with decorative tile. Between several bronze chandeliers hang a myriad of colorful lamps, and that's not even mentioning the books. Shelves and shelves of them line the walls and fill aisles of the room, each one bound in cloth or leather. There are also heaps of scrolls stacked along the shelves, the handles they're wound around made of carved wood and bone, some even inlaid with mother-of-pearl and semi-precious stones. I spend a solid minute turning in a circle and taking the whole place in. Wow, I finally say. Smells like leather and paper and something else that I'd say was cedar, but who knows? I have the urge to walk up to each shelf and pull out the books and scrolls one by one, letting my hands trail over the dried ink and soft paper. This place feels like magic and wisdom, and I might be having a spiritual experience right now. I can feel Dez's eyes on my face. Eventually, he peels his gaze away to take in the place as well. "Is this the Royal Library?" I ask. The corner of Dez's mouth curves upwards.
"One of them."
"One of them?" I repeat dumbly.
"This one is where many of the realm's official documents are kept. The main library is on the eastern grounds of the palace."
I can't wrap my mind around the sheer magnitude of that. He leads me to a table, and one of the chairs magically slides out for me. Dez takes a seat across from me, and for a second he just appraises me. When he looks at me like that, I feel acutely exposed. "What?" I finally say, tucking a lock of hair behind my ear. He gives me a soft smile.
"My mother would have loved you."
Just saying those words, he's invited ghosts into this place. I barely remember my own mother, and I don't have any memories of her being especially loving to me. It's a beautiful gift to imagine that Dez's mother might have loved me. "You think so?" I finally say.
"I know so."
He says it so steadfastly that my one objection, that I'm human, dies before it ever leaves my lips. Before I can ask more on the subject, Dez lifts his hand and flicks his wrist. Off in the distance, I hear the sound of paper sliding against paper. A scroll rises above the aisles and floats towards us. The bargainer's hand is still in the air, and the scroll lands softly in his open palm.
"This is the report taken from the victims that recovered from their imprisonment,"
Dez says, changing the subject. He places the scroll on the table. I get up and drag my chair closer to him. "These were taken from the survivors of Carnon's prison?" I ask.
"Just the Nightfae survivors,"
Dez says.
"The other kingdoms are recording the interviews of their victims. At the next summit, our kingdom's hold will compare notes, but until then, we only have my subjects' testimonies."
I know without looking that I'm one of those testimonies. It was optional. Perks of being mates to a king. But I did it anyway. I've worked enough cases to know how helpful testimonies can be. "Why did you want me to see this?" I ask, lifting the edge of the parchment between us. I catch a glimpse of my name and my stomach dips a little. Dez had been in the room when I gave my testimony, so he knows what happened to me. But seeing it written out next to all the other victims still makes me squirm.
"You went to the nursery to determine whether Carnon was those children's father."
Dez slides the parchment over to me.
"I thought you might like to read what the other prisoners had to say about their experience."
His words sound almost like a challenge, and I eye him a bit circumspectly before I glance down at the scroll. My eyes travel over the paragraphs written in elegant scrawl. I skip over my own testimony, focusing on the other women who escaped. One by one, I read about 9 different Fae soldiers, each who'd been kidnapped in her sleep. Each had languished in Carnon's prison between 1 and 8 days. Apparently, they, like me, were able to recover from a week's worth of the Fauna King's black magic. Those who were captives for longer than 8 days, they now lived far below us in glass caskets. The more I read, the more I feel Callie the PI surge back to life. I've missed this, digging into cases, solving problems. It takes me only a little longer to stumble across what Dez must have wanted me to. I tear my gaze away from the scroll. "All but 2 were sexually assaulted by Carnon," I say. The 2 who escaped that fate hadn't been sexually assaulted at all. This wasn't due to the Fauna King having a change of heart. They just happened to be the 2 most recently abducted women. Carnon hadn't had enough time to incapacitate them with his magic. He liked violating women when they couldn't fight back. Dez nods.
"And?"
he probes. I return my attention to the parchment. It takes only seconds for the rest of the pieces to fall into place. And all but two confirmed they were pregnant. I say, 7 women raped solely by Carnon. 7 women end up pregnant. I meet Dez's gaze. So Carnon is the Casket Children's father? Dez leans back in his seat, his legs splayed out. One leg jiggles restlessly.
So it seems.
I want to pull my hair out. None of this makes sense. But I thought Dez believed that Carnon wasn't the father. Before I can finish the thought, someone knocks on the library's doors. Dez waves away the scroll and it floats back onto the shelves. Another flick of his hand and the library doors open. In saunters Malachi, looking just as rakish as usual. He bows to the both of us, then straightens, focusing his attention on Dez.
Sorry to interrupt, he says by way of greeting, but duty calls.
Dez straightens in his seat.
What's on the docket? There are borderland issues to deal with, 2 fairies you'll be honoring with war cuffs and brunch. Oh, and a solstice invite you need to respond to.
I'm already beginning to stand. I really need to figure out what I should do with my free time now that I'm marooned in the other world.
Wait,
Dez says to me. I turn to look at him.
Would you like to join me?
After what I saw yesterday in his throne room, I shake my head. Have fun. I head out of the room, leaving the King of the Night and his oldest friend to run the realm without me. Chapter 8. I almost cloister myself away in Dez's chambers. Almost. But the prospect of hours and hours of boredom keeps me from getting too comfortable in Dez's rooms. So, changing into the most badass outfit I can find, leather pants, knee-high boots, and a wing-friendly corset top that I get hopelessly tangled up in because straps, I decide to actually explore the palace. I might not have my emotional armor back in place, but damn, a good outfit does half the job. Today's stop? The Night Kingdom's main library. After stumbling around asking for directions, I finally find it. Like the rest of Somnia, it's made from the same distinctive white stone, its roof the green-blue of oxidized copper. I climb up the grand stairs leading to it, the pale stone glittering in the moonlight. The lamps that line the stairs spark with warm starbursts of light. And inside, oh, inside, the arched ceilings are lined with painted tile, copper chandeliers hanging between them. Everywhere I look in the cavernous room, beautiful fey objects are on display, from a huge tapestry that seems to shimmer different colors in the light, to a marble sculpture of 2 winged fairies locked in battle. Correction, a moving marble sculpture. The statues make grinding noises as their stone muscles move. I walk up to the sculpture and stare at it. Several seconds in, one of the statues turns its head, scowling at me.
They don't like being stared at.
I nearly jump at the voice. A man stands at my side, gazing at me rather than the sculpture. If they don't like being stared at, why are they on display? I ask. He presses his lips together, and for the life of me, I can't tell if I've just irritated or amused him.
Do you need any help?
He asks. No, just looking. He bows his head.
Please find me if you need assistance, my lady, and welcome to the Night Kingdom Library.
I watch as the fairy walks away. That was nice. He called me lady and didn't ogle at my wings the way I feared he might. Tentatively, I pass the sculpture and move deeper into the library. Here there are rooms upon rooms and floors upon floors of books. Men and women sit at tables between them, flipping through volumes. Like the library I was in earlier, this one smells like old parchment, leather, and cedar. Choosing a room at random, I begin pacing the aisles. Out of sheer curiosity, I pull a book bound in light blue silk from the shelves, flipping it open. I don't know what I expected to find, but another language wasn't it. I skim through several pages, but they're all written in the same archaic script.
It's old Fae.
I let out a squeak, nearly dropping the book. The fairy who greeted me earlier is back, lurking just over my shoulder.
Are you spying on me? I accuse, my voice a whisper.
He gives me a shrewd look, standing even taller.
The king of the night has requested me to make myself indispensable to his mate.
Uh-huh. He doesn't even know I'm here.
Way to go, Callie. Tell your would-be stalker that no one knows where you are.
He tilts his head.
But doesn't he?
Fairies have this weird doublespeak I'm starting to get the hang of. This one is pretty clear. Translation?
Better check your facts, bitch, because he totally does know where you are.
So, Dez is keeping tabs on me, and he sent would-be stalker here to help me. I reassess the fairy at my side. Callie, I finally say, holding out my hand. He stares at it for a beat before delicately clasping it in his own.
Jerome.
His gaze moves to the book in my other hand.
Are you looking for anything in particular to read?
He asks. Just browsing, I say. I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Perhaps you'd enjoy a different section of our library, unless you're worried about curses.
Curses? I repeat. Stoically, he says,
the book you're looking at deals with curse-caused ailments, particularly those that cause hemorrhoids, unexpected bowel movements.
Jesus! I close the book and return it to its shelf. A thought comes to me. Do you have any books on the king? Several hours later, I sit at one of the reading tables, a stack of biographies and histories of the realm next to me. Some of the books were originally written in English, the colloquial language of the other world, but the book I currently have open was originally written in Old Fae. When he pulled it from the shelves, Jerome spelled it to read in English. It's a strange sight. Every time I turn the page, Fae letters dance and morph into English ones. As for the content of the book, it is equally intriguing. I feel like a thief in the night learning Dez's family history without his knowledge. He would have done the same thing had roles been reversed. My finger moves over the text. It describes yet another battle Dez fought in. Like most of the others, this one took place on the Borderlands, the area where, according to this book, day meets night. And like all the other battles mentioned, the book discusses how swiftly Dez cut down his opponents and how courageously he fought. I begin to skim over the battles. It's not that I'm unimpressed, but after reading about the umpteenth person getting brained, the glory of the fight is a little lost on me. Several pages later, I close the book. I'm not sure what I expected to find. Perhaps some insight into who Dez the Night King really is, but I should have known better. So far, all the books seem to be scrubbed of all interesting and relevant information. All I've really learned is that Dez has been a revolutionary king, dragging the Kingdom of Night from the Dark Ages, pun intended, to not just one of the leading realms, but also one of the most enlightened, a title that had traditionally belonged to the Kingdom of Day. I've also learned that before Dez was a king, he was a soldier, as the last book so eloquently, re-graphically, described. Other than that, there's precious little about my mate. I grab the next book from the pile, a small, worn volume that fits neatly in the palm of my hand. There's something about this book, between the soft, faded leather cover and its humble size, that makes me think this one will be different. As soon as I open it, I can tell I'm right. Chapter 1. Desmond Flynn, The Forgotten Child of Night. The next line I come across, I have to read twice. Like most Fae kings, Desmond Flynn was born from the royal harem. Harem? That one little word makes me go hot and cold all over. Kings have harems? Dez never told me this. I find I care less that Dez came from one and more that this is a normal practice in the other world. It's unnaturally hard to concentrate after that, and I find that my eyes drift over most of the text. At some point, the atmosphere of the library changes. Where it was quiet before, now the place is deathly still. It's like silence itself becomes muted. The hairs along my forearms rise. And then from the silence, the sound of heavy footfalls. I glance up in time to see Dez striding into the room, his body sinuous as it moves. He has eyes only for me, and it's here in this grand setting that I realize just how much Dez commands the space around him. I'm used to him moving amongst the shadows. Seeing him stride through this huge cavernous room like he owns it, technically he does, is sort of hot. And by sort of hot, I mean really freaking hot. Harem. The word slides its way into my mind, souring my sexy thoughts. Dez disappears a moment later, reappearing on the table I sit at. He perches himself on the edge, tilting his head to read the spines of the books next to me.
Doing some light reading, cherub?
Some. Harem. My mind whispers. Harem, harem, harem. He lifts the cover of the top book and raises his eyebrows.
You want to know about the history of my kingdom?
His eyes go soft when he glances back at me. He's making my intentions seem way too noble. He should know better. He must know better. But he looks sincere, and that's enough to throw me off. Do you have a harem? The question just slips out, my voice hoarse with emotion. Dez's expression freezes in place.
I'm sorry, what?
Do you have a harem? I repeat. A crease forms between his brows.
Why do you ask?
That's not a no. My heart is in my throat, my pulse thundering in my ears. One of the books mentions you were born into one. His eyes flick to the open book.
I wasn't,
he says smoothly. He lifts the small volume.
Desmond Flynn, the forgotten child of night,
he reads. His gaze moves to me.
So my inquisitive siren hasn't just been reading about my kingdom after all.
Do you have a harem? I press. Around us, other fairies have fallen back into their books, either no longer interested in our spectacle or, more likely, Dez is using his magic to cloak our words. He leans forward, a lock of his white hair falling loose from the leather tie holding it back.
And if I did, what would you do?
I'm weak in so many ways, but not in this one. I would leave you. Even though it would ruin me, I would. Shadows begin to coil and twist at the edges of the room. Someone doesn't like my answer. Dez raps his knuckles against the table.
As you rightly should.
I don't know what I expected him to say, but it's not that. He straightens, sliding off the table.
Come.
He holds out his hand. You still haven't answered my question, I say, staring at his palm. He sighs.
No, Callie. I do not have a harem. I never have.
My body relaxes and I take his hand. Why not? I ask as he leads me out. He glances down at me, a brow raised. It's an honest question.
And one that has many answers.
He responds smoothly as we leave. Answers that you want to tell me? I nudge. He smiles a bit.
I do, he admits, but at some other time.
We exit the library and cut across the palace grounds. Before we can so much as enter the castle proper, Dez releases my hand and halts. I stop a few paces in front of him, turning to glance back over my shoulder. The look he wears? Dez is no longer being playful or doting. He looks so very fey, hungry for things that he wishes to possess. I know that sly, calculating look. It's the same one he gets when he has something in mind that I might not entirely like. What? I ask.
You've been reading about me and my kingdom.
That does not at all explain his expression. His gaze cuts to my bracelet. I take a step back, the skin of my wrist prickling. Now I know that look. It's the look he gets right before he has me repay a debt. Don't! I give him a warning look. I have no idea where his mind is at, and that, more than anything, frightens me. He strolls forward, his heavy boots thudding against the stone.
Funny that after all I've demanded of you, cherub, you still think you can sway me with your protests.
Dez steps in close.
You still owe me many, many favors.
Hundreds of them, I know. Forcing me to do things against my will won't make me like you more, I say. He leans in close.
I've tricked, hurt, and killed men in front of you. I'm confident a few debts that you owe me won't damage my chances.
I slit my eyes at him. What am I supposed to say? I do owe him favors, favors that I bought fair and square. And I am the sucker that loves Dez even at his worst.
Let me see that pretty wrist,
Dez coaxes. I don't have time to react before his magic wraps around my arm, lifting it up. He steps in close, inspecting the remaining rows of beads. His eyes move from my bracelet to my face.
Several weeks ago you mentioned that you wanted to see my kingdom,
he says.
Were you being serious?
First he comments about me reading up on his kingdom, now this. I bite the inside of my lip, not sure where he's going with this line of questioning. Eventually I nod. I meant it. I do want to know everything there is to know about this man, including the kingdom he rules.
Good.
He looks all too pleased.
Then you and I are going on a little trip.
Should I be worried? A trip doesn't sound too bad.
And we'll be flying there. Together.
Chapter 9. I glare at Dez for the millionth time as we step out onto the highest balcony of his castle, rubbing my arms against the slight chill. Right now, we're out at the witching hour, stealing away in the night like criminals. I can't believe I'm about to do this. Fly. Back on Earth, flying means boarding a plane. Here it literally means flapping your wings, which, shocker, I'm not too thrilled about. I mean, even birds can screw up this flying business, and I am no bird. I glance down at my bracelet, where two beads are missing, the cost of taking a trip with Dez. Two beads. He catches me glaring at my bracelet, and capturing my jaw steals a kiss that definitely wasn't his to take.
Cheer up, love,
he says.
This'll be fun.
Fun my ass. The only thing remotely pleasant about this experience is that Dez is wearing an Iron Maiden shirt, his tattoos are on full display, and his leather pants are hugging the shit out of his backside. I mean, I can be mad at him and still enjoy the view. Over his shoulders, his wings expand, taking up a staggering expanse of the balcony on either side of him. They shimmer in the moonlight, his curved talons gleaming along their edges.
Stretch your wings,
he commands. I'm still annoyed at you, I say, even as I extend my wings. The sensation of them unfolding is both uncomfortably foreign and inexplicably satisfying, like taking off a bra at the end of the day. Since my wings appeared, I've kept them closely pressed to my back. I hadn't realized until now how good stretching them would feel.
I'm aware of that,
Dez says, his voice a silken caress. He disappears. Before I can so much as swing around to look for him, I feel his warm hand run over the upper ridge of my wings. He strokes them the same way he strokes the rest of my flesh, the touch oddly erotic.
They're breathtaking, you know,
he says, his fingers skimming over my feathers.
Just one more tempting thing about my enchantress.
Enchantress? The question slips out before I remind myself that he's supposed to be receiving my ire right now.
That's what fairies have started to call you. An enchantress.
I can't decide whether I'm more flattered or flustered by this particular detail.
We don't have sirens here in the other world,
Dez continues.
But from time to time we do have magical beings, enchanters who can enthrall others with their magic. It's a very coveted power.
He circles back in front of me, his gaze moving to my wings.
Try beating your wings.
I groan. I'd forgotten for an instant that I was out here learning how to fly. I do as he says, the action stirring my hair. Dez watches my wing beats shrewdly, nodding like an instructor.
Now try jumping, he says. See if you can keep yourself in the air for any length of time.
Want me to juggle while I'm at it? I feel like a circus sideshow. He folds his arms and just waits. I sigh. Fine. I jump, beating my wings. Nothing impressive happens.
Again?
I try again, and like the first time, my wings are useless.
Again?
I try again, and again, and again. After doing it a couple dozen times, I begin to understand that there's a timing to it. And then, after a few more dozen tries, my wings successfully fight gravity, if only for an extra second. Des nods, his face serious.
Good enough.
He takes my upper arm, leading me to the edge of the balcony. Good enough? I look over at him skeptically. Good enough for what? The bargainer steps onto the balcony railing. What are you doing? He steps over the ledge and turns to face me, securing his feet in between the stone balustrade.
Cherub, it's all right.
He says this like he's the most reasonable guy in the world, and not, in fact, the dude balancing precariously on the edge of the highest balcony Insomnia. He slaps the top of the marble railing between us.
Step up here.
A disbelieving laugh slips out. No way!
Callie,
he says, sounding disappointed.
I'm wounded. I would never lead you astray.
Says the man who taught me to drink and gamble. I think he needs to tighten up his definition of astray. When I stay rooted in place, he says,
We can do this the easy way or the hard way.
I fold my arms over my chest, not budging. His eyes brighten with excitement. There are few things Des enjoys more than my defiance. Unfortunately for me, it never gets me very far with him. I feel the breath of his magic at my back, forcing me forward and then propelling me onto the edge of the balcony in front of him. You are such a bastard, I say as I climb onto it. Up here, the wind is blustery enough to shake my body and whip my hair about. From the other side of the railing, Des grabs my waist, bracing me. He grins up at me like a pirate.
Sticks and stones, Callie. Now,
he gives my sides a squeeze.
Open those wings for me again.
Ignoring all my better judgment, I do as he asks. A gust of wind blows against me, lifting my wings up.
You feel that?
The bargainer asks, studying my every reaction.
That's an air current. We'll be using them to travel.
Can I get down now? Des's lips quirk mischievously.
Cherub, the next surface your feet touch will be in a different city.
I feel my face pale. I shake my head. I'm not ready.
Yes, you are.
Des's wings spread wide behind him, and wind tugs at his t-shirt and hair. Right now, right in this moment, I'm sure I'm in a dream. He's too wild, too beautiful, too fantastical to be mine. And what he's asking me to do is too strange and unbelievable to be real.
Fly,
he says, releasing my waist. Power rides his words, pulling my wings into position. Before I can object, he spreads his arms out to either side of him. It happens in slow motion, his body tipping away from me and the balcony, the night poised to swallow him whole. His feet slide off the ledge, and then he's falling. Des! I reach for him reflexively. My body pitches forward, and I lose my balance. Suddenly, there is no more balcony railing to perch on. There is nothing but empty air beneath me. Des smiles as he stares up at me, completely at peace with the fact that we're falling. And then, right in the middle of our descent, he vanishes. Vanishes! I'm left staring down the palace grounds 100 feet below, and Des is nowhere to be seen. Oh God, I'm fucked. So fucked. This isn't flying, this is the art of dying, and the one person who got me into this mess is gone. I guess I now have my answer to that stupid rhetorical question. If a friend asked you to jump, would you? Apparently, twat waffle that I am, I would. Des's magic still encircles my wings, tugging at them. I grit my teeth and begin to follow their lead, angling them to catch some of the wind. The force of my descent makes it difficult to control my movements. Floor after floor of the palace blur by me, the ground quickly zooming up. I continue to fight the wind that's trying to fold up my wings, Des's magic aiding me. Just as I'm beginning to think it's hopeless, my fall begins to slow. I let instinct take over, continuing to tilt my wings to level me out. I go from falling to cutting into the wind, my body beginning to glide over the ground rather than plummet towards it. I'm pretty sure I'm no longer going to fall to my death, but I'm still not exactly flying. I'm more like that autumn leaf that gets blown about by a gust of wind. Out of nowhere, Dez manifests beneath me, his hands moving to my waist.
Beat your wings, love.
I can barely hear him over the whistle of the wind in my ear, but I begin to force my wings up and down, up and down. I wobble, and for a few seconds I worry that I'm going to lose whatever gains I've made and plunge the rest of the way to the ground. But now Dez is beneath me, making sure I don't do exactly that. Slowly, steadily, my wings propel me up. Dez releases me as I break away from him, rising higher and higher in the air. Holy crap, I'm flying. A shocked laugh escapes me. It's more exhilarating than I could have imagined. I hit a warm air current and then I'm gliding, the thermal carrying me on its own. A shadow with wicked-looking wings swoops in next to me. I glance over at the bargainer, his white hair rippling in the air. He smiles at me and it lights up his entire face.
Follow me.
The wind snatches away his words, but I read his lips. He pulls ahead, then banks right, his body arcing across the sky, those giant wings of his gleaming dangerously in the moonlight. If I thought he was fantastical before, it has nothing on him now. Dez is magic, and somehow, through some odd twist of fate, I get to be a part of that magic. I follow his lead, adjusting my wings to curve through the air like his do. I laugh again, my heart so much lighter now that I'm officially flying. Dez is still on my shit list for scaring me almost literally to death. But this might be worth it. It might even be worth the fear and loathing I endured in the days after I received my wings. I follow Dez until he drops back, and then the two of us are gliding next to each other. There's nothing quite like the silence up here in the sky. The wind is too loud for us to talk, and yet everything has a quiet pall to it. Every so often, Dez points to something or other. Once it's a troop of pixies, another time it's the faintest pattern of lights far, far below us where I imagine one of the other kingdoms of the other world, kingdoms that don't float in the sky, are located. He even gestures to a fey couple I glimpse out in the distance, their bodies largely hidden in the clouds. I can only just see a mismatched pair of glittering wings and two intertwined legs, and then the clouds move, obscuring them from view. I notice one or two more of these couples as we fly. Judging by their embraces, they're lovers who've snuck away to be together under the starlight and clouds. After what must be an hour or two, I make out a giant landmass ahead of us, blocking out a segment of the night sky. Another floating island, just like Somnia. As we get closer, I begin to notice the city lights, which twinkle in pale pastel colors. Next to me, Dez begins to descend, angling himself towards the floating island. It's only once we're flying over it that I truly get a sense of the place. It's a land of turrets and moats, towers and bridges. They flash by me as we glide across the landscape. Interspersed between the buildings are huge swaths of foliage. This far away, I can't tell whether they're fields or forests, jungles or manicured parks. As we get closer, I begin to notice the idiosyncrasies of this island. Buildings seem to change size and shape the moment you peel your gaze away. Streets lead to nowhere. Even the colors of this place are somehow both brighter and duller than they should be. It looks like a fairy tale and a carnival all wrapped into one, and yet it's as though everything is not quite as it should be. No one looks at us as we begin to land. We're just two more fairies in this strange land. Dez glides to a stop, gracefully lowering himself to the ground. There's nothing graceful about my landing. I slam into the bargainer, nearly bowling us both over. He catches me around the waist, his eyes wide, and then he begins to laugh. Presumably at me. The elation that flying brought me is bubbling up my stomach and out my throat, and I can't help but join in. I just flew. With Dez. All those years of me hoping to be a part of his world, of despairing that it would never happen, They led me right to this moment. The irony is that it took a madman to make one of my deepest wishes come true. Eventually, our laughter dies off, but I can still see it twinkling in Dez's eyes.
I like your hair when it's windswept,
he murmurs, touching a lock of it. The same can be said for his hair. I've always had a weird obsession with his nearly shoulder-length locks, and right now they look especially sexy.
Was flying everything you hoped it would be?
He asks. This would be the perfect time to rip him a new asshole for tricking me off a ledge, but I find I don't want to ruin the moment. Not when I enjoyed myself so thoroughly in the sky, and not when he's holding me like he's not sure he ever wants to let me go. It was amazing, I say breathlessly. His eyes spark with excitement, and Dez lets my torso slip through his hands until we're face to face. He presses a hard kiss to my lips, his mouth demanding, and then I slide the rest of the way through his arms until my boots touch the ground. Dez steps aside to give me a better view of our surroundings.
Welcome to Philia, the land of dreams, he says.
My eyes devour the shop-lined street before us. Each store is more spectacular than the last. Hanging in the window of the clothing shop closest to me is a dress that looks like it's actually made of seafoam. Next to it is a man's suit, made in a hue of blue I swear I didn't know existed. There's a cloak that seems to be made of the night sky, small dots of light flickering in the dark fabric, and a wristlet that looks to be spun from clouds. Next to the clothing store is a curiosity shop filled with furniture and decorations as unusual as they are alluring. A table made entirely of rose quartz seems to glow from within. Next to it is a glass vial filled with a swirling mist. The sign for it says it's a dream come true. Farther down the street are restaurants whose tables spill onto the streets, the aromas drifting out from them both foreign and appetizing. I can feel Dez's attention on me. He places a hand on my lower back, leading me forward.
Here on Philia, he explains, you'll find doors that lead to nowhere, people you recognize one moment and don't the next, places you're sure you've visited before, though you can't say when or how. Philia is the place where every one of your fantastical thoughts can come true.
The land of dreams. It's some strange love child of the other world and what I imagined Wonderland might look like. Everything has that elegant fae touch to it, but nothing is quite what it appears. We pass by a bubbling fountain that people are gathered around, vials in their hands.
The waters here can make humble wishes come true,
Dez says next to me. I watch in fascination as a fae woman with golden hair dips her glass container into the water. I'm tempted to try the water myself just to see what small wish might come true. We pass by several cafes and my attention lingers on the low lighting and the soft conversations drifting from within. You have restaurants here in the other world? I say.
You're surprised?
Dez looks amused. I am. I assumed that the other world was essentially flowering fields and impossible architecture. Restaurants just seem so human. Suddenly, Dez is steering me towards one of them. What are you doing?
Taking you out to eat. Unless, of course, you aren't hungry.
My stomach chooses that exact moment to rumble. I don't know how many calories flying burns, but the number must be staggering. I could eat. His lips twitch.
Good. So could I.
The restaurant we walk into is done up in shades of silver and periwinkle, from the place settings to the mounted mirrors to the walls. Near the top of the high ceilings, plumes of clouds hang, and in the center of each table is a vase full of delicate white flowers that I've seen all over Somnia. As soon as Dez and I are seated, I surreptitiously scan the room. Even at first glance, the men and women around us don't look quite normal. For most, it's simply small details. Eye color that's a little too bright to be human, or hair too long to be grown by a mortal head. But then amongst them, there are a few fae that especially stand out. Like the man with lavender gray skin and a mouthful of sharp, pointed teeth. or the woman whose limbs are long and slender, her skin the color of deep shadows. In contrast to my gawking, the restaurant's patrons ignore us completely. Do these people know who you are?
They do,
he says. Why aren't any of them... I trail off, looking for the right words.
Fawning over me?
He says, filling in my sentence for me. Yeah. He lifts a shoulder.
I've cloaked our appearances.
Cloaked our...
It's a small illusion meant to subtly alter our features, to prevent recognition.
He leans forward.
I figured neither of us wanted the extra attention.
Damn, but that was thoughtful of him. My attention drifts around us again. It's not just the people here that are unusual. Halfway through the restaurant, the building morphs into a Gothic cathedral, the pews and pulpit currently empty.
Dream logic,
Des explains. I glance back at him only to realize that someone has already served us drinks and bread. I blink at the sight. This place is really... unnerving. Magical. Des leans back in his seat, a sardonic smile spreading across his lips.
What do you want to eat?
He asks. I furrow my brows. We haven't received menus yet. I haven't even fully finished speaking when a plate of ravioli drops to the table in front of me. Now, how the hell did that happen? Des laughs at my wide eyes. Is this even safe to eat? I ask. He leans forward, his sculpted forearms resting on the table.
Would I lead you astray, cherub?
I give him the stink eye. Last time you said that, you tricked me into falling off a building.
Flying off a building.
I roll my eyes. Semantics, Des.
Semantics are everything, Callie. Or have you learned nothing from me?
I pick up my fork, eyeing my pasta, which is covered in some mystery cream sauce. No, you're right. You've taught me exactly what it means to be a slippery bastard. Des lounges back in his seat, a smug expression on his face.
I'm taking that as a compliment.
I cut into one of the raviolis and take a bite. Somehow, it's everything I didn't know I wanted.
Good.
I close my eyes and nod, savoring the taste a little longer.
And look, it didn't even kill you.
Des just had to go and be Des. Yet, I tack on, because I can be snarky too. I open my eyes and, I shit you not, in front of Des, a churro shimmers into existence, plopping onto the table a moment later. It even has that cheap waxy paper wrapped around its base, just like what you'd find at a carnival. I raise my eyebrows. Des picks up the churro and kicks one foot, then the other, up onto the table. Shamelessly, he bites into the dessert. I'll give him this, he's owning this moment. Crossing his ankles, he says,
Tell me, love, what's a dream of yours?
A dream? I repeat, another bite of ravioli midway to my mouth.
Something you want out of life?
I take my bite of the ravioli, chewing slowly. Once I swallow, I shrug. To be happy, I guess.
Come on, cherub,
he says, pointing the churro at me.
Don't make me take a bead. I know you've got something more specific than that.
I stare down at my pasta, sucking my cheeks in. I don't know, I eventually say. 2 months ago, I would have told you that I wanted a husband and a family. I'm surprised the confession comes out as freely as it does. Des might not be the only person learning how to be vulnerable. The truth is, before Des came roaring back into my life, I was lonely. Painfully, achingly lonely. The kind of loneliness that comes from feeling like your life is passing you by and there's no one there to witness it. The bargainer squints at me, his face inscrutable.
You no longer want that?
I meet his eyes. It's so hard to read him when he's like this. I take a deep breath. No, I still want that, but... It only takes a few extra seconds to pry the words loose. But now I don't fear that it won't happen. That's what happens when you discover you have a soulmate. The fear of a lifetime of loneliness evaporates. Dez's eyes heat at my admission, and I swear if we weren't in a restaurant full of people, he'd sweep the place settings off the table and make love to me right here. I clear my throat. "What's a dream of yours?" I ask, feeling like my skin is lit. He watches me, his body so still I feel like he's waiting for a moment to strike. Finally, he says,
"We share similar dreams."
"You want a husband, too?" I can't help but tease him. He flashes me a wolfish smile, choosing that moment to take another, very suggestive, bite of his churro.
"Perhaps," he says, "but you'll do."
I all but roll my eyes. "I'm thrilled to be your booby prize." His lips curve up. He stares at me for a beat, then, coming to some sort of decision, he kicks his feet off the table. Tossing a few coins next to my plate, he reaches for my hand. "But I'm not finished," I complain. "I've barely touched my ravioli, and I plan to eat the crap out of it. I'm a girl who can throw back her food."
"Want something to go?"
he asks. My lips part, but before I can respond, another churro drops to the table, nearly falling into my ravioli. Now it's Dez's turn to raise his eyebrows.
"Looks like someone has a little case of food envy."
"I totally do. He made his churro look good." I grab mine and let Dez lead me out of the restaurant. Outside, the sky is still as dark as ever. I stare up at it as I take a bite of my churro, feeling oddly exhilarated. Our boots echo along the street as we walk. I don't know where we're going, but I don't much care. Nights like this are familiar to the two of us. Countless times Dez took me to some foreign metropolis, and together we'd wander the streets. Sometimes he'd ply us both with alcohol, other times coffee and pastries. "This reminds me of our past," I murmur. Dez takes my hand, bringing it to his lips and giving it a kiss. I feel my heart expand. I get to have this man forever. A lifetime of Dez at my side. It's such a wild thought, I'm not sure I'll ever fully get used to it. We get to the end of the block of shops. Here the street opens into a grand plaza. Right in the center of it is a sculpture of a winged couple holding each other in a tight embrace. Only this sculpture floats several feet in the air. I pause in front of it. "Who are they?" I ask, staring at the couple. The woman seems to be made of the same dark stone my beads are, her skin drawing in the light. The man she embraces is made of some shimmering sandstone, his skin seeming to glow from within.
"The lovers,"
Dez replies.
"Two of our ancient gods."
He points to the man.
"He's Phyrion, god of light, and she's Nyxos, goddess of darkness."
Nyxos. Why does that name sound familiar?
"In the myths,"
Dez continues,
"Phyrion was married to Gaia, goddess of nature, but his true love was Nyxos, the woman he was forbidden from ever being with. Their love for each other is what causes day to chase night and night to chase day. Here in the land of dreams, they're finally allowed to be with each other."
I stare at the sculpture a long time, finishing off my churro. Even though it's just a myth, the tragedy of it still gets to me. I hate doomed love stories. Life's filled with enough heartache as it is. My eyes drift past the statue to an enormous stone bridge the length of at least 2 football fields that branches off the grand plaza. Halfway across it, the lamps that illuminate it fade into the misty darkness. Beyond the bridge, I can just make out another floating island. "What's over there?" I ask, nodding to the landmass. There's something about it, something insidious and compelling that calls to my darker nature. Dez frowns.
"Memnos, the land of nightmares."
"Memnos," I repeat, staring at it. I remember Dez listing off the names of all these floating islands weeks ago. "Are we going to visit?" I ask. The bargainer hesitates.
"Do you remember the bog?"
How could I forget? I nod.
That's just one of the many creatures that call Memnos home.
I shiver a little. Point taken.
Eventually, I'll show you the island, but right now...
He takes my hand, giving me a deep look.
Right now, this trip is for us.
Chapter 10. The next morning, I wake inside our suite in Philia to the tickle of Dez's hair against my back and the press of soft kisses down my spine. I stretch languidly, a small smile spreading across my face. After a magical evening exploring Philia last night, the two of us checked into a hotel just off of the main plaza that boasted rooms that change color and theme. Neither of us mentioned the fact that Dez must surely still be camouflaging our appearances. Staying at a hotel like a normal couple is just not something kings can usually get away with. The kisses down my back now pause. A moment later, Dez nips my ear.
Have I mentioned how well you wear bedhead?
He says, his voice low and husky. I laugh into my pillow, reaching out with a hand and pushing away his meaty body. He rolls, dragging me with him, stealing kisses from my lips. I blink my sleepy eyes open.
This is my favorite thing,
he says, looking up at me. I'm still trying to drag myself awake. What is? I ask.
Waking up to you each morning.
He taps a finger to my nose.
Especially when you're sleepy and adorable.
I suppress a yawn. How are you so awake? Rather than answering, he slides out from under me. I plop back against the mattress, my eyes already beginning to close. Once again, I'm roused by his touch, his hand warm on my back. And then I smell it. Deliverance, a.k.a. coffee. I pry my eyes open, and there it is. The steaming mug of coffee is only inches from my face. I reach for it. Dez says, moving it just out of my grasp.
If you want it, you're going to have to get out of bed.
As if to encourage me further, my covers slide off my shoulders of their own accord, slipping down to my ankles. I grab the edges of them and haul them back up. They slide off again. More forcefully this time, I yank the covers back up. You know what? Screw Dez and his coffee. Just as I'm tucking the blankets under my arm, they begin to slip away once more. I grapple with them, playing some ridiculous game of tug-of-war with an inanimate object. Oh my God, Dez, seriously? He leans against one of the bedposts, taking a sip of what's supposed to be my coffee.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
That lying bastard. Fine, I growl, rolling myself off the bed. I'm up. I stomp over to him, studiously ignoring the fact that he's gloriously shirtless and his hair is tied back in a stupidly sexy man bun. I snatch the mug of coffee from his hand and head out onto the balcony that branches off from our room.
A thank you would be nice,
he says, following me out. So would an apology, I retort over my shoulder. Big surprise, he has nothing to say about that. Breakfast is already laid out on the tiny mosaic table that takes up a good portion of the balcony, and it smells so good. I take a seat, leaning back in my chair to sip my coffee. Lord, does it taste good! It's almost worth losing sleep over. Across from me, Dez sits, his large frame dominating the little bistro chair. He picks up his espresso cup, sipping delicately from it. Normally, the sight of that tiny cup in his hands would make me laugh. Right now, however, I just glower at him over the rim of my mug. It doesn't help that he has a painfully pretty face, or that his massive chest and corded arms are on display. Why does he have to always look so goddamn good? Especially when I'm pretty sure I look like roadkill. This is just one more reason why the world isn't fair. Dez stares pointedly at my plate where a steaming breakfast burrito sits.
Aren't you going to eat?
Why did you make me breakfast? I ask suspiciously. He sets down his espresso, his eyes guarded.
Is this a trick question?
It seems unusually nice, I say.
Now you're just trying to be mean.
Maybe I am. In the past, Dez would take me out to breakfast, and there were never any strings attached. So why do I feel as though this time there are, indeed, strings attached? I take another gulp of my coffee before placing it on the table. Did you seriously wake me up early just to feed me?
It's not that early,
Dez says, sidestepping the question. He might be right. The stars twinkle above us just as they did last night when we fell asleep. Why did you make me breakfast? I repeat.
Because I love you, he says. Does everything have to come with a price?
My gooey heart melts a little at his admission, but I've known him just a little too long and a little too deeply to trust those wide silver eyes of his. I look at him skeptically. With normal people, no. With you, absolutely. He smirks over the rim of his espresso, the first sign that I'm right. He does have something up his sleeve. So what is it?
You'll find out soon enough.
I do find out soon enough. The moment we re-enter our suite, my training leathers appear on our bed. I groan. But I thought we were on vacation.
Your enemies don't care about your vacation.
He does have a point. It's no use fighting him on this. I can already feel Dez's magic compelling me onwards. Grumbling, I don the clothes and the two of us head out of the room. The two of us leave the hotel and trek towards the dark wilderness that borders the city center. And it is wilderness, pretty though it is. I trip over loose roots and have to push ferns and exotic flowering plants out of the way as we bushwhack a path through the overgrowth. The farther we walk, the more sluggish my movements become. I think it's just simple exhaustion from last night until the sensation becomes so extreme that it feels like I'm in a slow-motion action sequence. Dez, meanwhile, seems to be moving just fine. The wilderness opens to a clearing, and Dez stops, turning towards me. He tosses me a sword, and it takes a ridiculous amount of effort to lift my arm up and snatch it out of the air. Mirth dances in his eyes.
Sword up, Callie.
I tug the weapon from its sheath, my limbs heavy. It takes forever for me to lift the sword, and by the time I do lift it, he's already coming at me. It's all I can do to duck and dodge his blows. And he's going easy on me. So pathetically easy.
Faster, Callie.
There is no way in heaven or earth that I can move any faster. I can barely move as is. It's like trying to swim through honey. Not even the kick-ass leather outfit I wear makes up for the particular torture of training today. Dez, meanwhile, doesn't seem to be afflicted with the same issue I'm having. Whether it's because the place doesn't affect him or he's using magic to counteract its effects, he moves swiftly, coming at me so much faster than I can defend myself. I don't know how he does it with such accuracy, but each time Dez nicks me with the sword, he strategically slices into my outfit, making little cutouts in the leather. I now have dozens of tiny triangles speckling my upper chest and my outer thighs, and not once have I landed so much as a blow on him. Not once. Finally, after what feels like an eternity, Dez announces the training's over for the day. I fall into a heap, the sword clattering to the ground next to me. From the ends of my hair to the tips of my toes, I'm tired. My outfit looks like a cutout snowflake, and right now, I don't give a damn about pretty much anything. Day one, Callie zero.
You did good,
Dez says, coming over to me.
This place is enchanted to move slower than the rest of the world. It's said to mimic a slow-motion dream.
That would have been helpful to know beforehand. Of course, I notice it didn't affect Dez the same way it did me. Sneaky fairy. I lay my cheek on my knees, exhausted from the training. He crouches next to me, his knuckles stroking my face.
We can't rest just yet. We've got to move on to the next island.
His voice sounds half apologetic. There's just no way I'm dragging my butt off this patch of grass. Dez must see that, because rather than trying to coax me back to my feet, his arms slip under my wings and the backs of my knees. He lifts me against his chest, cradling me to him. His talon-tipped wings spread wide around us, and then he leaps into the air, the two of us ascending into the night sky. As the cool air whips my hair about, Dez cups my face to his chest, shielding me from the worst of the wind. I lean my head into him, breathing in his masculine scent. I don't understand how even out here in the middle of a foreign world's night sky, I can still feel right at home pressed against this man. But I do. My eyes drift close and I let the beats of his wings rock me to sleep. My stomach dips and I wake with a start. 1,000 stars sparkle around me as I blink my eyes open. When I try to sit up, I feel Dez's arm.